Blog Talk Radio.
Ron Edwards. This is the Ron and Don program coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul on a fairly nice evening here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. We've got a lot to go with tonight, both nationally, and we've got some local stories. I tell you, in many regards, it's out of control. Don Allen will not be with me tonight. He is on assignment, if you will. Hopefully we'll be back in the next couple of weeks, but the program must go on. The information must continue to flow to you, our listening audience across the world, nationally and locally, if you will. First of all, we have to comment on what has been the longest hearing in the history of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Under Senator Grassley of Iowa. It has been ugly up there the last 2 days. You saw it on the front page of our newspapers and et cetera. It is unbelievable. It is ugly. Of course, Kavanaugh will be confirmed, if you will, right along party lines, though a couple of Democrats, allegedly, three of them, including one of our senator from the state of North Dakota, Indiana, and possibly one other, have been released by the minority whip of the United States Senate to go ahead and play the game and vote for confirmation of Judge Kavanaugh. He is a current sitting judge in the Federal Court of Appeals for the District of Washington, D.C. He's one piece of work, but they have been going at him. And by the way, I'm so proud of the two African Americans on the Senate Judiciary Committee, Senator Harris of California and Senator Booker of New Jersey. They have stood their ground. It is ugly. It is ugly, my friend. It really is talking in terms of the real America that we live in. And we, as Black Americans, we're in big trouble. As soon as Kavanaugh gets in, they're going to begin to talk in terms of a repeal of everything, not only affirmative action, but voting rights, civil rights actions, and et cetera. For all of you out there that are saying they can't do that, welcome to history, and think that that was the same kind of statements that were being made by Japanese Americans, by Mises, on the late afternoon of December 7th, 1941, and then the continuing days, that they could not be stripped of their citizenship, their rights, their properties, and et cetera. Japanese Americans rounded up and put in concentration camps. You don't think that, particularly in light of the book that is coming out in the next couple of days, talk in terms of what's really going on in the White House, if you will. Donald Trump is ready to push any number of the red buttons, if you will. It is just absolutely out of control. But hey, you know, this president is the president of the extreme right, and any others that identify with him, and I'm hearing more and more conversations, whispers, and et cetera. That's the reason we've got a couple here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, which we're going to share with you tonight. One of them central to racial problems inside of the Minneapolis Police Department and a city council that has become very, very silent, if you will. And a president of the Police Federation, the very powerful Police Federation, absolutely out of control, indicating that it is time for Negroes to be replaced, if you will, and we will be getting to that later on in this hour-long program. But for those of you that really like to follow the politics, of the American system, if you will, of democratic institutions. I hope you've been doing like we've been doing today, is that we have really followed closely this hearing. And it is a monster. Judge Kavanaugh, smooth, if you will, a requisite of the new quote-unquote white man in America, really, and comes across well, but some of the Democrats are clearly digging in. They know that this may very well be the last hurrah, because it's clear that Donald Trump and the extreme right wing in the United States of America have prepared for the final solution. See, many of you are frightened of that particular word, and so are many in the African-American community. But if you're a historian, as we are, and et cetera, you must understand and have studied. Notice what I said, have studied, because I don't know that any attempt to study it now is going to do you any good. The final solution, how it was activated, how it was used, in Nazi Germany, and later in Russia, if you will, under Stalin and other quote-unquote strongmen of the former Soviet Union and et cetera. That's how bad and tough it is. And for those of you that took the time today, and this, by the way, the hearing will be going on at least until 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time. And it's just that rugged, man. It's real rugged. And yet the two most significant individuals who I think will raise the anger of the extreme right, it will be Harris of California and Booker of New Jersey, if you will. So keep your eye on that as it is moving along. Well, let us get into the local scene, if you will, because the news is not being filtered out to you, unfortunately. And then, you know, unfortunately, there are many, including many African Americans, who really don't want to hear what's really going on, too scared that they'll be called to arms, be called to do battle, and et cetera. And that's already been calculated. And so you'll get a better understanding during tonight's program of just how ugly it is out there, you know, for those that talk in terms of the progressive city with progressive ideas, progressive philosophies, progressive institutions, and et cetera. Man, you in hell's hole. You don't even know it. You don't even recognize it, if you will. We're just blessed and lucky that we have control of a program which gives us access across the world, across the United States, and here in our beloved, quote-unquote, Shangri-La at the headwaters of the Mississippi River, if you will. First of all, because we really want to save one of the most dangerous situations that has emerged with regards to statements that are being made about Congressman Keith Ellison, who is running for and is endorsed for the Attorney General of the state of Minnesota. And so that will be really a part of the last half hour or thereabouts of tonight's program. But we want to talk in terms of our man Bob Crowe. I tell you, Lieutenant Bob Crowe, hard hitter, if you will. He and his motorcycle group, the City Heat. Oh, that's right. A lot of y'all don't know anything about the story entitled City Heat. We suggest for those of you that really have advanced programs in your computers, you need to go back and take a look at City Pages, the newspaper City Pages about 13 years ago, and take a look at a hell of an investigative report they did about, quote-unquote, a group of police officers who had a motorcycle club called City Heat, man. Oh, my God, are they on the move, if you will. And it centers around the People Stadium. You know the People Stadium, the place where allegedly all those black folks worked in helping to build it, which was all fake, if you will. But, hey, you know, leadership was comfortable with the fakeness, if you will, with the lies, misrepresentations, and et cetera. Existence of no numbers, if you will, that could be authenticated, audited, and et cetera. Well, what's happened is that since the opening of the People's Stadium, now known as U.S. Bank Stadium, the two individuals who have been in control for the Minneapolis Police Department in the sense of hiring officers sworn peace officers. You just can't be nobody going in there and being a part of the security force, if you will, have been two African Americans who we well know, if you will, and who are certainly well known within the department and et cetera. Commander Charles Adams, a 34-year veteran of the Minneapolis Police Department, and Commander Houston Moore, a 36-year veteran, if you will. Anyways, about 3 months ago, there started being rumors that the Negroes, if you will, I'm talking now like, you know, some of you folks out there affiliated with the Federation and white police officers in this department, some of you who call yourselves friends, if you will, of Commander Adams and Commander Moore. In fact, the only guy that has really stood up, white officer that has really stood shoulder to shoulder with these two African Americans is my friend, John DeMonaco, former president of the Federation, who so many people thought poorly of, but who has been a guy that has stood up as it pertains to the race issue. And brother, I'm telling you, this is a race issue, if you will. And so Commander Adams and Commander Moore were, you know, designated, that the necessary negotiations and things went on, and the Sports Facility Authority and the Minnesota Vikings signed off on it. The NFL signed off on it. See, that's all important, by the way. In fact, things really hit hard when there was an announcement back in February, late February, really right after after the Super Bowl, that Commander Charles Adams of the Minneapolis Police Department was going to be in charge of the security preparations and et cetera for the Final Four, which will take place next April? Yeah, April here, and again in our beloved Shangri-La. Well, there started to be rumors that the two commanding black officers weren't qualified. They did not have the wherewithal and et cetera. And they got to realize these two gentlemen, 34 years, and I'm pretty sure Houston is at least 36 years. There's only one other white officer that I know exceeds in longevity or tenure, Houston Moore. And so I think we are absolutely correct. But if someone has the better numbers than what we're giving you, feel free to text us a message after tonight's program. We'll be going until 9:30. So there has been a lot of scuttlebutt been going on, and it's really heightened since the Mohammed Nord situation a year ago, and it really has intensified with those led by certain members of the city council who really do not want Mamdala Arredondo as chief of the troop. And my newspaper column for next week in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, I have no equivocation, if you will, not intimidated by what we are hearing coming out of City Hall and et cetera, that Chief Mamdala Arredondo has earned a permanent appointment as chief of the Minneapolis Police Department. He is filling out the last year of the term of the former chief, Janae Harto, who I thought was wronged greatly by former Mayor Betsy Hodges and others who were, quote-unquote, whispering in her ears, if you know what we're meaning. And so after the Super Bowl, there started to be rumors that that the Federation, the Minneapolis Police Department's Federation, under the command of my good friend Bob Crow, had been indicating that it was time for the dark cloud to be removed. I mean, the dog whistles ban had been fully engaged. I'm really surprised that the mayor of this city has not had a little bit more courage to stand in support of his chief, though some in the mayor's office maintain that Chief Arredondo is not a strong leader, that he is weak. I mean, we just have to tell it tonight here on the Ron and Don program coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis, because I'm just afraid that what we're getting ready to see is a removal or a political decision not to reappoint Chief Arredondo as permanent chief of the Minneapolis Police Department. And so it made sense to me that this attack had begun, and it was centering on the stadium, and it was centering on the nice money that Minneapolis police officers have been making in the going on 3 years that the People Stadium has been open. And so a couple of officers, you guys know who you are, two white officers, if you will, began to circulate the rumor, the misinformation, the very serious allegations that there was corruption, and that Commander Moore and Commander Adams were double dipping, and that they had the two of them had a private contract for $4,000 each, and in exchange for that they were pocketing that money and et cetera. And they wanted to bring in some more Negro officers, quote unquote. That ain't how they were referred to. They were referred to by the NIG. And so the rumors kept circulating, and then information in the last 4 weeks was being circulated that the Commander Adams was in fact involved in a significant criminal act and et cetera. Now, Bob, you've been on a roll, buddy. There's no doubt about it, because we're also going to get into this tonight's program the statements that we first reported 3 weeks ago that you've been making about Congressman Keith Ellison being a criminal who is getting ready to face some additional criminal charges. But we'll be going to that in the last half hour of tonight's program. And so in March and April, very hostile statements undermining the authority and clearly the trust that had been instilled in the relationship with Commander Adams, if you will, and Commander Moore, two African Americans who are the ones that work with the deployment of officers, the hiring and assignments, and et cetera. And so you started hearing statements that for this affirmative action BS, if you will, it was time for the Negroes to move on and for white men to step up and take control and make sure that the money is dispersed in the appropriate way. Well, first of all, there's not a disproportionate number of African-American law enforcement officers from the Minneapolis Police Department that are working at the stadium. Okay, I mean, that's first and foremost. And clearly the appropriate balance with a department which only has 69 African-American police officers and a grand total of about 170 officers of color all together, if you will. And so the rumor kept swirling. At one point, the Minneapolis Star Tribune was asked by sources to take a look at these allegations. They declined, if you will. Just as the Star Tribune declined last summer and talked in terms of the reduction in the number of African Americans hired and deployed in the Minneapolis Police Department, it was really sad this time last year that the Star Tribune decided not to do that. But things have really gotten out of control, and it has escalated so badly that in the last 4 to 5 days, we're not talking about anything that people can play like we didn't have an idea, and you know the mayor Jacob Fry is caught out there again, not knowing really what's going on, and certainly not supporting his chief. And then some of the council members, like Cam Gordon and them, begin to talk once again about the fact that we need a change, if you will. They've already tried to make all 13 of them the bosses of the chief, if you will, and to take away significant charter authority from the current mayor, Jacob Fry, if you will. It appears that fell apart. And by the way, Barry Clay be correct. Congratulated. Mary Clay is the chair of the Minneapolis Charter Commission, which is a part of the structure that would have had to been utilized and would have had to have confirmed, if you will, with the attempt to place the question of a new structure on the ballot in November. If Barry Clagg hadn't stood up, I'm not sure that we would have not seen a real firefight, if you will. But the Police Federation took significant advantage of those particular series of hearings that you had, decisions, and et cetera. But Cam Gordon and a couple other council members found themselves out there on an island with sharks around it, and the sharks were not them. And so, consequently, they had to back away. The mayor at least stood firm that he did not see the relevance, if you will, and he could not accept the fact that the additional authority under the charter would be taken away from him, and et cetera. I thought that the chief, Arredondo, was extremely professional, handled himself nicely, but it really didn't make him, because the race card has been played. It is being played, if you will. And so these rumors continued to intensify, if you will, over the last couple of weeks. That changed at the People's Stadium, that the two African-Americans, Negroes, or whatever other terms are being used within the leadership of the Federation, it was time for these two individuals to go. It was time for, and in fact, the Federation had already identified the two white officers that they wanted to be positioned to take over the authority responsibility. Now, I'm not sure at this hour, as we speak tonight on this program, that the Vikings are going to buy that. Kevin Warren, by the way, is an African-American, chief of operations for the Minnesota Vikings. I think he would begin to have some problems with how Lieutenant Crowe, leadership of the Police Federation, are discussing the reason that we've had enough black clouds handling certain responsibilities and floating, quote-unquote, over the beautiful People's Stadium, which they envision as basically being white folks' stadium, with African-Americans and anybody else of color not having any significant role. And so these rumors have been put out, and in fact, in the last, 48 hours, a call was made to the company that actually, quote-unquote, contractually runs the People's Stadium, if you will, though the state of Minnesota and the Minnesota Vikings own the stadium, half for each side. But, you know, you have this policy, you have the legislation, which we shared for a number of years with our listening audience and et cetera, on these programs, in our newspaper columns, on our radio programs and et cetera. It was important that that people understand what the pecking order was, what the accountability was, and et cetera. Anyways, the Federation has taken the position that the time is right. Conditions are right here in the United States. Conditions are right here in Minnesota. Conditions are right in Minneapolis, and conditions are right as it pertains to taking on the role of the bully, if you will. And I'm like, wow. So what has happened in, let's just say, the last 48 hours is that the Federation has now named by name, Commander Charles Adams and Commander Houston Moore as being persona non grata and should be immediately removed, and they should be replaced by white officers who will take on the responsibility of the hiring and positioning and assignment of officers and et cetera. Now, the Vikings and the company that manages the People's Stadium have begun to say, look, you know, we're sick and tired of this kind of internal politics. Tell you what we'll do. We'll just turn around and give the contract to Richard Stanek and the, quote-unquote, Hennepin County Sheriff's Department. Oops. Oops, you know. In fact, at one point, the offer had been made to Chief Harrington. It's unfortunate, Chief, that you were not counseled on this. Chief Harrington's department to have some of their officers, the majority of them white, come over and fill some of the spots and slots that are not being filled because, for whatever reason, Minneapolis police officers are being encouraged by the leadership of the Federation, and this is the word that they use. And by the way, as we speak, there is a document that was sent to all of the white members of Federation, which indicated that that there will be a boycott of security personnel. Now, this boycott actually will start as early as Sunday. The Vikings is opening on Sunday against San Francisco, the 49ers, if you will. And I was shocked. I was absolutely shocked that the president of the Federation would use the term boycott. That's a dangerous word legally to use. It's even a dangerous word politically to use. But they are saying that white officers will be boycotting, if you will. And then, Chief Harrington, you should be made aware that the African-American officer, I think he's a captain, isn't he? Yes, Chief Harrington, indicated that they had no interest in working the games at the People's Stadium under the two African-Americans, Adams and Moore. Yes, they did. Yes, they did, Chief. I have to say that to you, Chief Harrington. I mean, this is what news is all about. This is what it is about. This is how it has to be dealt with. This is how it has to be addressed, because this is what is happening in our beloved Shangri-La, if you will. So there is documents out there right now as we speak tonight, if you will. Some of you have friends who are police officers. In fact, we have some folks that call in and talk about how much they know and they respect their, you know, police friends and et cetera. Why don't you give them a call and have them send you a copy of the letter sent out under the signature of Bob Crow, Lieutenant Bob Crow, and his exec committee, in which they have clearly indicated that racial lines have been drawn and that Adams and Moore must be removed, if you will. Now, it's going to be interesting if they decide to go out to Eagan, to the Viking headquarters, and say that to the chief operations officer, who's black, and ultimately that goes up to the Wolf family, you know, and nobody's given any thought to this, obviously, Lieutenant Crow, the NFL, you know, with many problems as the NFL has at this hour in regards to race, if you will, and having a season that will not be disruptive by quote-unquote the issue of race. It is the National Football League. You know, some call it the Negro Football League. We'll just be appropriate, the National Football League, NFL. In some parts of the United States, though, the N stands for something else other than national, if you will, or even Negro. It does have a Negro connotation, but it's that other word, the word the president likes to use when he's talking about black Americans, if you will. And so it is on, if you will, and we project here, we're going to do it like it's election night, we project that the winner will be Robert Crow. Crow of the Minneapolis Police Federation will prevail. His letter sent out to the membership sometime this afternoon, in which he clearly indicated it was time for the dark cloud, for the black cloud, to be removed, to be purged, and et cetera. We have a feeling, unfortunately and regrettably, that maybe before the game Sunday, that our commanders Adams and Moore will be told that they are being relieved of responsibility for the hiring of police sworn personnel at the stadium, if you will, and that they're being replaced by two individuals who everybody already knows their names. In fact, one of them is by the name of Cucho. Cucho is well remembered on the north side of Minneapolis. He used to spend a lot of time with a lot of young people, if you will. He's ticked off because of a decision that was made that did not allow him to continue to rip off a nice chunk of money. In fact, in the case of you, Cucho, you should get back that $25,000 that you took from our American veterans who were in our city last week and were forced not to have a parade because of the fall down, charging them to get a permit for a parade, if you will. Nobody wants to talk about it in this town. Yes, 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 Officer Cucho. Yes, sir, you guys, you're one of the two that have been designated that you will replace Commander Adams and Commander Moore, and we will bring a whiter complexion. I mean, hey, I'm merely telling you what is being said. You will bring a whiter complexion to this entire narrative, if you will. And so keep your eye on it. I'm quite sure the press will try to suppress it as best they can. The public information officer, John Elder, will do all he can to pretend that such a situation exists. I don't know how they will approach Chief Arredondo, and I don't know what the mayor will do, and I don't know what the council will do, but I do believe that a mistake will be made in removing both Commander Adams and Commander Houston, and I think a real mistake will be made when the Police Federation demands of the Minnesota Vikings a concurrence, again, using the word a concurrence, with the decision and the call by the Federation for the removal of two high-ranking African-American officers, if you will. So that is the situation as we speak tonight. We were told that it's quiet and et cetera. Yeah, I don't listen very well. Particularly when I know and have known for a long time the politics of what is happening. I think it is outrageous what is being done to undermine African-American officers in the Minneapolis Police Department, but it is done. We repeat again what we said just a couple of minutes ago. Our feeling is that Commander Adams and Commander Houston Moore will be asked to step aside by Saturday afternoon, if you will. And so we watch that very closely. Well, as we move on to the second issue, I'll be damned if it isn't our good friend again, Lieutenant Crow. I tell you, Lieutenant Crow is showing, as we have said on some of our other programs on television at MTN and et cetera, that be a part of our program Sunday afternoon here in the Twin Cities. It was a part of our radio program on Tuesday, also coming from MTN, if you will. Bob Crow has sent the signal that times are changing and we're going back to a Minnesota, quote unquote, in which even before Dred Scott, where even those that pay their little dues to the Police Federation, African-American, the officers who are still at the rank that they have to be members of the Federation, is that, you know, I'm kind of hearing them say we really don't need them, and that's one of the reasons why there's been so many problems inside of the Civil Service Commission and et cetera with regards to why so many African-Americans, Native Americans, and et cetera, are failing the test or not coming through, if you will. But we have been talking about this for a couple of years. We warned the so-called civil rights leadership and et cetera that these things are coming, but they are just not up to the task, and so we have to move on. So that brings us back to Lieutenant Crow. Powerful, powerful man. I mean, just no doubt about it. We first exclusively reported to you on both this program, our television program, radio program, and et cetera, that Lieutenant Crow had a couple weeks ago doing a finalization of, what was it, a two-week training session for new supervisors. Those, in other words, those are individuals that have just obtained the rank sergeant in the Mass Police Department, and they will be our supervisors on the street, and et cetera. We talked about the role of former Chief Dolan, who talked in terms of how he tried to undermine, quote-unquote, the Mill City Five. Mill City Five comprised of Arredondo, Adams, Hamilton, Dennis Hamilton, and Lieutenant Harris, who is on medical leave, and Lee Edwards. No relationship, who has since retired. They were the Mill City Five, won a $750,000 settlement from the city of Minneapolis, if you will, for discrimination and et cetera. But the Crow and the Federation have said that they can come up with as much money as they want, but the days of happy darkies and et cetera is all over. I'm like, wow, it is definitely out of control. And it comes during a rather blistering summer where, quote-unquote, you know, African-American was gunned down, if you will. Of course, as everyone said, he deserved it, whatever that was supposed to mean. And yet, on that occasion, the two officers in question who shot Mr. Blevin received full support of the Police Federation. But interesting enough, a year ago, when Muhammad Noor, who later was charged for the first time in the history of the Minneapolis Police Department with murder, if you will, when Officer Nord, a Somalian, a black, if you will, received no support whatsoever from the Police Federation, there was nothing but silence from the politicians and everybody else. Also, it's being said that there is an effort to make sure to undermine Chief Arredondo. Federation is basically saying that that happy days are here again, if you will. And again, that dog whistles, you know, dark clouds, if you will, monkey business and such things as that. And so we were not surprised when we, about 3 weeks ago, heard the information about that meeting in which the supervisors, new supervisors, were told by, and this is Bob, you know, Bob, you can correct it, dress it up, and get all the folks in the room to say that you never said it, if you will. That may be a hard chore, because they don't necessarily understand the political nature of why they would, you know, tell a lie about what it was that they heard. But Bob Cole has really been on a mission, and what he has done is that he has talked in terms that Congressman Keith Ellison is a criminal. He referred to him as a criminal, which I'd be kind of concerned given that Congressman Ellison's son is a member of the Minneapolis City Council, a young man who is really trying to make a difference, if you will. I'd kind of be concerned about that. His mother, the ex-wife of Congressman Ellison, is a distinguished member of the Minneapolis Board of Education. I'd be concerned. But Bob Crow and the Federation are basically indicating that the entire Ellison family are nothing but a bunch of crooks, if you will. Now, that's really outrageous. And when we exclusively first broke that information 3 weeks ago, we expected to hear a rousing, response and rejection and calling the Federation out and drawing a line in the sand and all those kinds of things. Man, we've heard nothing but silence. But let me tell you about the latest. And it was really driven by an interesting article, I don't know, 3 or 4 days ago in the New York Times. You know, that is a powerful, powerful, powerful paper, if you will. You know, there are far too many people, even in Black America, that maintain that the New York Times, a white newspaper, says it's gospel and that makes it the gospel. I don't subscribe to that, don't believe it at all. But the New York Times did a piece about what's happening here in Minnesota surrounding Congressman Ellison. And what has happened is that both Fox News in Washington, D.C., and the writers for the New York Times are now saying that there is a serious mystery that cannot be explained. And that ties into the statements that Bob Crow and the Federation have been making, that Congressman Ellison is a criminal, if you will, and has been involved in other kinds of criminal activities, if you will, is an agent provocateur of the Israelis, if you will. I mean, it's really wild, and I'm like, wow, my God. So what happened was that in January, days into January, a 58-year-old African-American woman was kidnapped by two white drug dealers, if you will, and she was taken to a location in close proximity to the corrections facility for women at Shakopee, Minnesota, if you will. This 58-year-old African-American woman's name was Geraldine Williams. Miss Williams, by the way, and I say this for you naysayers out there who make the mistake of saying that it's just made up, because members of that family still reside here in the Twin Cities. But Miss Williams was taken to a site there a short distance from the Shakopee Women's Reformatory, and she was executed. She was shot in the head and, of course, died instantly. What happened, the authorities down in that part of the state there, if you will, Dakota County, Scott County, Carver County, those three counties, did a pretty good job of tying some things together, and they developed a profile of the two gunmen, if you will. And they were searching for the gunman when Williams was being prepared, planned, if you will. And at some point, someone said to the family of the deceased, a 58-year-old African-American woman, that one of the gunmen would, in fact, actually attend the funeral. I mean, some vile, warped-minded individuals, if you will. And so the Estes funeral home was kind of on guard, if you will, but at the funeral itself, there was no Caucasian that caught their attention. But as they were closing up, they had finished the service and everything, and were preparing to finalize with the way that the situation was going to be handled, a Caucasian gentleman, very dangerous-looking individual, came and indicated that he had just drove in from somewhere, if you will, and here in Minnesota, and he wanted to see his friend, his beloved friend, if you will, the person that he had known, which, you know. But Estes did the right thing. They called the police because they had already been told that the possibility of this individual showing up for the funeral. I mean, if that's the cop, it's weird, you know, that's dangerous. But these were very dangerous individuals who apparently had possibly killed a couple of other African-Americans over a period of a couple of years. So they were kind of known to the authorities and et cetera. And so when the Caucasian assassin left Estes' funeral home, police followed him to his father's home, a farm somewhere here north of the Twin Cities, if you will. We don't want to do the White Fourth Estate's job for them, if you will, but they followed him, and actually a compound had been built there on the farm, if you will, and it was underneath of a kind of Winnebago, false bottom, and et cetera. But anyways, the authorities were able to secure the specific place that this compound had been built under, if you will, and arrested. We'll just speak his first name, Mark, if you will. Dangerous, dangerous man. But Mark and his brother, who was also arrested and ultimately charged with murder of Miss Geraldine Williams, a 58-year-old African-American woman at that time, in the first couple of days of January of 2000. But what was so tragic about this entire story? Miss Williams had caught a case, as we say, and she had been placed in incarceration in jail in Ramsey County, if you will. And so the amount of marijuana, if you will, that was in her car, et cetera, it certainly didn't constitute what was happening. But part of the decision of the authorities was to try to draw out, quote unquote, the ringmasters, if you will, the top guys, and et cetera. And of course, I don't know how well the St. Paul authorities knew, as we move into the last 10 minutes, how dangerous these men were. But the family of Miss Williams' $1,000 and paid it to an attorney of record who was to handle the case, and this went through basically all of 1999. The attorney, ineffective counsel, would be quote-unquote a poor reflection because it was outrageous what this attorney did or did not do. But one of the things, because of his inaction, if you will, as the attorney of record, it gave aid and comfort to these two drug dealers, white drug dealers. We have to make sure that we keep reflecting the race because it, you know, it's a race kind of question. And so on the evening of, let's say, the 2nd or 3rd of January 2000, they kidnapped this 58-year-old African-American woman, took her to that landfill down there, just a couple of doors away almost from the women's correction facility, and executed her. And the reason that we emphasize the correction facility, because the records of the Department of Corrections, DOC, will show that that particular night there was a lockdown at the facility because the facility thought that they had lost track of one of their female inmates and that some way or another she had been removed from the institution and she had been shot execution style. The institution was shut down. There was a head count, if you will. To their relief, they realized that they were not missing anyone. It took a couple of days for the authorities, Carver County, Dakota County, Scott County, those three jurisdictions working, finally discovered that the deceased was a Geraldine Williams. Given the lack of legal, if you will, and legal protection by the attorney of record, the family asked that the $5,000 be returned, and that the attorney didn't do anything for Ms. Williams other than delay and give these two gunmen. Oh, by the way, in the case of Mark, if you will, the white gunman who actually fired the shots into the head of Ms. Williams, as we understand it, he was later killed. Some conflict there in the facility. I do believe it was Oak Park Heights, if you will. And he died. The gunman was killed. I think, do believe that his brother is still serving time for the brutal murder of Miss Geraldine Williams, 58 years of age at the time of her death. And so during that time, back in 2000 and 2001, there was a lot of reflection about what had happened. Unfortunately, the family did not get any kind of support that one would have hoped for because of who, you know, the attorney was, the perception, and then there were rumors that the two white gunmen had been provided with information with regards to what was happening with the case pertaining to Miss Williams, who was later to be brutally murdered by these two white gunmen, assassins, drug dealers, and et cetera. And you know, we understand in our enclave as we come down to the last 6 minutes of tonight's program, we understand what happens in our enclave when powerful people who are getting ready to become even more powerful than they were at that particular time in January of 2000, that people just don't have the energy, the wherewithal to meet the crisis, the circumstances, and all of those. And basically, the Williams or the family of the deceased of Miss Williams, Geraldine Williams, 58 years of age, were left to twist in the wind. And then when they asked about the $5,000, they were told that it cost $5,000. to go from Minneapolis to St. Paul. I mean, that's kind of what, that's reason, that's kind of the way the attorney of record. Oh, that's the other thing. We're not going to, you know, play the game for those out there who want to scream and holler that, you know, one is attacking people and character assassination and et cetera. No, no, no. We'll let y'all go out there. And in the case of, and you can find it because already the New York Times and others have been taking a look at these allegations. In the matter of the death of Geraldine Williams, if you will. Now, it also means that there are legal and criminal and police records in Ramsey County, and also Dakota County, Scott County, and Carver County because of the conspiracy and the arrangements that were made to shoot, execution style, this African-American woman. Now, we have heard over the last, let's say, 72 hours, that this is something that should not be discussed. There are other kinds of allegations. And back to our good friend Bob Crowe. Bob, we don't want to forget you because people have been kind of asking the question, well, where's all this information coming from? I said, well, it's coming from the authorities themselves who, you know, are tied in with the Republican cause, if you will, and tied into the defeat of the Democratic nominee, if you will. I mean, it's just that simple. I don't know how it is that people don't seem to understand just how corrupt, you know, institutions and systems can become. I mean, it's just as simple as that, if you know what I mean. So if people are interested, if you're interested about pursuing and seeking justice for an African-American woman who lost her life because of ineffective counsel, then take the time and check the records, if you will. See what it is that you can come across. Now, for those of you that like to wax and, you know, talk in terms that this is not what happened and blah, 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 be very careful now because Ms. Williams still has family here in the Twin Cities, and because some of you will not know who they are, you know, you may talk out of turn, if you will. You know, it really was no accident behind her head and took the life from Miss Williams. It's the reason that there was a vendetta, if you will. I know that those of you out there that know and understand the meaning of the word vendetta, if you will, and old Mark, who thought that, you know, he had pulled something off, found himself, quote-unquote, in the obituary column a couple of years later. Even the safety of the penitentiary didn't help him, quote-unquote, survive. It's an interesting story. Our betting is that the local media will not touch it. They'll try to stay away from it. But it looks like the New York Times and Fox News, Washington, D.C., because I got to tell you in closing, there is a lot of information coming out of the political, of the Black Congressional Caucus with regards to, you know, a race here in Minnesota. I don't understand it. I mean, it's far beyond the capacity of an old African-American such as myself. But for some reason or another, the Black Congressional Caucus has been saying some things. A lot of whispering and et cetera going on, and this comes at a time when the move has been made to remove two African-American commanders from their roles as it pertains to facilitating security and protection for the good citizens of Minnesota. I'm just not sure if we've got the capabilities as we move towards what the last 90 seconds or thereabout of tonight's program. I just don't know if we've got the capacity as the African-American community. And by the way, congratulations to the Black Baptists. We gave them our heads up on our television program yesterday across the world and et cetera. You know, welcome to Minnesota. Enjoy yourself. Too bad that There's no real black facilities that you can leave your money with. But we don't have a 5, 4, 3, or 2 star anything here. You know what I'm saying? So unfortunately, you got to leave the money with the man, quote unquote. But again, welcome. May God's hand continue to rest upon your shoulder. You, the National Black Baptist of America, if you will, welcome. Once again, they were here, a decade or so ago. And so we wish them the best. Enjoy yourself, because one of the things, I guess, that we do a lot of here, in order to keep our attention away from standing up for justice, if you will, we pretend that we're always partying. We're having a good time, you know what I mean? We're doing our thing, you know what I mean? Be it in the name of Beyonce, if you will, or SOS Band, or be it in the name of Jesus Christ. You know, we just like to do our thing and keep our eyes away from what has happened. In fact, I know that there are some who are already saying, well, the death of Miss Williams happened almost 20 years ago. Ain't nothing we can do about it. You know, we need to move on. But I bet you, if you look real hard for the attorney of record as it pertains to Geraldine Williams, a 58-year-old African-American woman, executed 2 white drug dealers because they realized that they had, quote-unquote, bought their guy, if you know what I mean, there is somewhere in the heavens a spirit, a Holy Ghost, that has not been satisfied that justice and fairness has been awarded, committed to, and brought forward on behalf of Miss Williams. For those of you that you don't know anything about this, if you will, you know a lot of y'all ain't telling the truth. You know, Geraldine, this Geraldine Williams. People thought folks had forgotten about it, but I'll be damned if we didn't find out that she still had relatives who still think about her, who love her, and who want answers from those who still are in power about what it was that happened, to the extent that Ms. Williams did not have the kind of protection, and she damn sure didn't get the kind of justice that she was given. We're wrapping it up. Hopefully my associate, Mr. Allen, will be back with us in a couple of weeks. But again, I'm Ron Edwards, and this is the Ron and Don program, coming to you from the beautiful enclaves of Minneapolis and St. Paul, where in many respects, we don't have a lot of heart. We ain't got a lot of guts, and we ain't going to rock too many boats. I hate to say it like that, but it's a fact. But maybe there'll be some justice for Miss Williams. All we can do to pray to God. On behalf of my associates and, quote-unquote, our team, we wish you the very best. I'm Ron Edwards, Don and Ron program. Good night.